Hi, this is Gavin from FE News. Today we're going to be unpacking the Black FE Leadership Group. I'm here today with Robin Lamman and Amajit Bassi, who are two of the pioneers behind the movement, which has gone on of recent months. So my guests, Amajit, can you introduce yourself, like your background, and so the audience can get a better understanding of who you are?
Thanks, Gavin. I'm Amajit. I've been a principal of a number of further education colleges spanning a career of around 30 odd years. Diverse settings, diverse size, diverse context. But one thing that does unify them is that in multiple situations, I've developed outstanding outcomes, and that's really core to my mission and my purpose in supporting the BFELG.
Thank you, Amajit. Robin, can you introduce yourself and maybe give a bit of a synopsis of your background as well?
Okay. Morning, Gavin, and morning, Amajit. My name's Robin Lamman. I'm, like Amajit, I'm a long-time server in the FE system. Started off as a school teacher, worked my way into FE over a number of years, and got up the greasy pole very quickly, but didn't manage to stay in the position that I'd achieved initially. So I followed that up with a stint in the FEFC as a policy officer, and subsequently went on to senior roles in colleges, including inner city colleges in London and in the Midlands. In the latter years of my FE career, I became chief executive of the Network for Black Professionals, and recently I've become one of the executive members of the Black Further Education Leadership Group.
That's great. Thank you, guys. So can we unpack what is the Black FE Leadership Group?
Well, briefly, Gavin, this is a group of Black and minority ethnic practitioners, but also, more importantly, it's a group of supporters of our cause. And our key thesis is that over the last decade or more, the representation of Black and minority ethnic leaders and staff members in the sector has been reducing sharply. At the same time, there's been a continued and steady growth of the proportion of Black and minority ethnic students. So just to put it in context, 30% of the FE intake is from minority ethnic communities. Only about 7% of the leadership of colleges is Black and minority ethnic. And similarly, the proportion of staff has been going down steadily over the last 10 years. So it's a question of social justice. We're quite clear that we need to be more represented as leaders and role models for those increasing numbers of minority ethnic students.
Yeah, that's great. And thanks for explaining that, because I think there's a number of people that were sort of trying to understand where is the group sort of coming from and why. And that's it's got a great heart of trying to rebalance things there, hasn't it? Amajit, with the Black FE Leadership Group, what's the sort of obviously Robin's laid down the challenge there to sort of try to rebalance things, but how is the group now trying to rebalance this? What's the sort of plan to engage stakeholders to be able to have a long-term legacy to be able to adjust the things which, like as Robin said, have slipped over the last sort of 10 years? How do you sort of see us sort of be able to move forward to be able to readdress that?
In a nutshell, Gavin, we are for a more inclusive, representative and successful further education system where everyone wins, students, staff and communities. And as Robin alluded to, our starting point is the significant disparities that persist in each of those three areas: inclusion, representation and attainment. And I include progress there. They reflect, as David Hughes has referred to, an unequivocal wrongness. So that's our starting point. And just to build on Robin's context, if you take the fact that a third of the student base in FE are from Black and minority ethnic groups, what isn't as clear or apparent is real significant disparities in their experiences and their success attainment. So Black Caribbean students persistently are underperforming their peers, and there's a run through from the school system there. You've got a very low percentage of participation amongst Black and minority students in apprenticeships, despite it being the signature policy for the government for the past 5 years, and obviously signposted this week going forward. And there's also a real issue with progression into higher education. So a recent report at Higher Education identifies that achievement of first honours degrees and progression to high quality jobs are stunted amongst Black and minority ethnic communities. So it's, the facts really do speak for themselves. So it's about inclusion, it's about representation, it's very much about students, staff, and communities winning.
And that's fantastic. And it's this sort of, how do we as a sector address A, the challenge with learners, and B, the challenge with staff? So not just leaders, but all practitioners. So like, delivery staff, some lecturers, tutors, trainers, assessors, the whole quality set. And then when it goes into the more middle management and into the more leadership roles, how can we as a sector start to address these challenges?
If I could start and then invite Robin to append, we believe in a more inclusive curriculum. We believe in new pedagogical practices, in essence, a more inclusive form and inspirational teaching and learning experiences that recognize the contribution of different communities. And that does mean reviewing the curriculum and the qualification system. So there's a call out there to the department as well as the awarding organizations, because when we refer to systemic, it starts with curriculum and qualifications, but it's also about a representative and developed workforce. So that's an inclusive point. That's really important, given the starting point that the overwhelming majority of the teaching workforce are white. We recognize, and it's really critical, that we embark upon significant workforce development alongside pipeline development. We have to rebalance the representation, but it's actually about supporting all of the professional community to provide a new proposition. So teacher training comes into being, mentoring, peer support, and inevitably leadership. And I'd include governance within that. We do advocate targets at sectoral level, at institutional level, and at learner level as well, and a forensic measurement of progress. And I'm sure Robin will talk about the sparsity of data at this moment in time. But it involves every college and a sector organization stepping up to the plate. It means self-evaluation and self-improvement. And it also includes celebration of good news stories, because there are good news stories. There's some cracking practice, and there's some really bold leadership amongst our Black and white leaders who are willing to come and work in an environment which is open and honest and solutions focused.
Yeah, no, thank you, Amjit. Robin, anything you want to add? Particularly, I think that was interesting what Amjit was saying about data and the sparsity of it.
I'll come to the data in a second, but I think it's important to stress the way that we've approached this, because we haven't just been complaining about the absence of representation. We took a decision to put out a fairly forthright open letter to key stakeholders throughout the sector, including the Prime Minister and Minister, Secretary of State for Education. And in that, we set out the nature of the challenge, but we also set out a clear statement that we are about partnership working. So part of the impetus behind our organisation, which was actually in its formation before the Black Lives Matter phenomenon hit, but it would be asinine for us to pretend that that didn't give us a real boost, because it's pricked the conscience of everybody globally about this this pervading issue of racism. And one of the things that's important about our open letter is that it contains a 10-point plan, a set of solutions which have been welcomed universally by the stakeholder groups that we've been talking to, by the Department for Education, and by practitioners. It's a really important point. Some principals are already implementing the 10-point plan in their institutions. But the data issue is critical, because although it's been anecdotally acknowledged that there's a problem, because the system has not been collecting data systematically for the last 10 years or more, we don't know the full scale of the challenge for staff. We do for students, because that's been measured, but not for staff. And that's why it's important. And we're very pleased about the response we've got from Gillian Keegan to our open letter. It puts data capture front and center, and that the fact that we're moving back to a mandatory data collection process is really something that we welcome.
And just to sort of explain it to the audience, really, what data in particular are you looking to sort of collect from the sector, particularly for staff?
Well, we need to know how many people there are. We need to know what levels they're at. So, for example, the issue of governance. Governors are responsible for appointing the leadership of colleges. So they set the tone for the organisation, and they are clearly instrumental in the culture of that organisation. So unless we get governance right, then we will not crack the problem. And at the moment, there's a degree of tokenism about governor appointments. You tend to get black and minority ethnic governors heavily represented in staff governing governors and student governors, and then the one or two sprinkling junior governors who don't really have much influence on the culture or on the strategy of governing bodies. So it's important that we actually change that fundamentally, so that more senior governors, chairs of committees and so on, are from minority ethnic communities. The key thing, Gavin, is it's unacceptable to have very large college groups in conurbations like London, Birmingham, Manchester, with an all-white governing body, an all-white leadership group, and yet 80% of their students from black and minority ethnic communities. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, 100%. So the Black FE Leadership Group was launched several months ago now. But to put it into context, this has been in the middle of a global pandemic. And obviously, that has been a big challenge for anyone to be able to do anything. So how has the group so far engaged the sector? What's been the early impacts? Because I know it's been significant, particularly around the 10-point plan. But also, Robin mentioned Gillian Keegan, you know, who is the Minister for Apprenticeship and Skills. And I know that she's very recently been in touch to sort of address some of the challenges that you've laid down. So sort of what's this sort of short to medium term response from the sector, and how's it moved forward from there?
As Robin alluded to, this group was preconceived before the era of lockdown. So effectively, we've had to be part of the new gig economy. in the context of actually how we work together. So our first intention was physically to meet in February, but all of that went out of the window. So we're sort of new tech innovators now, you know, like everyone of us. So our first meeting took place in July, and the first commitment there was to put a narrative out to the sector based on all the things that Robin outlined so effectively there. And you will note that the initial response was really, really rapid. And we got approaching 50 signatures very, very quickly. That's grown to approaching 200 now. And not only that, we've had engagement, widespread engagement from sector agencies, from further education institutions, AELP, World Skills, and others. And as Robin's alluded to, there's universal acknowledgement of the challenge that we've identified. We've been really pleasantly surprised how solutions focus people have been. And there's an appetite to work together, to learn and understand. It's not all straight line. There's an element of challenge, which we don't apologize for. But the tool of the 10-point plan has been really, really significant. So not only have we had colleges self-evaluate against that, we've got national organizations self-evaluating against that. And we've also had groups looking at that collectively. So we think we have a toolkit which is going to accelerate, you know, people's thinking. And the one common unifying request from the sector is, so what does outstanding anti-racism practice, and therefore what does an outstanding anti-racist FE system look like? And that's where we believe we've got a very unique contribution to make.
Yeah, very much. That leads my next sort of question, but I want to pause my thoughts to what is the response that's come back from Gillian. So Gillian Keegan, I think, seems really great minister, actually, to be honest. And how has she come back, and what is she sort of looking longer term to start to address? Robin, maybe you could unpack what Gillian's initial thoughts were and her response to the challenge that you guys laid down to the whole sector, really.
To quote from her letter, Gavin, she says that she wants to work with us to eliminate racism and address racial inequalities, pardon me, in our further education system, which is a great start to her response. One of the things that she made clear, she recognises us as the representative voice of Black and minority ethnic staff, and through us also speaking for the communities that our students come from. She's also made other undertakings, which we welcome. She's confirmed the allocation of considerable amounts of money to provide access to high quality apprenticeships and T levels. But and that's a positive, obviously. But we remain concerned that although there's this clear injection of money, it doesn't change some of the fundamental issues which have been obstacles in the past. For example, as Amit has already said, Black and minority ethnic learners find it much harder to access apprenticeships. And that could be a gatekeeper issue in colleges. It's more likely to be a gatekeeper issue amongst employers. So we need a mechanism for challenging that, for example. She's also accepted our contention that there needs to be a fundamental review of the curriculum so that Black role models and Black curriculum content is increased so that students can see themselves reflected in the materials that they're used to teach them. And they also see people who look like them in proportion in front of them. Because in terms of accessing the now very problematic employment market, they're going to be the ones at the sharp end. You know, young people have had a raw deal from this COVID crisis. And when the unemployment figures start rising soon, they will be the ones who suffer hardest. So we need to make clear and take the necessary steps to give them every chance to succeed. And that applies to white learners as well.
Yeah. If I can just add something very specific to Robin's commentary there, which is, it is a positive response from the minister, but with regards to the reference to the curriculum, one of the big issues is that there still tends to be an interpretation that that's confined to the history curriculum. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about all the curriculum, from the arts, from the technologies, to the science, at all levels, reflecting Black contribution, Black ideas, Black solutions, successes. You know, you can weave in different forms of construction from a global perspective. If you think about great innovators and engineers, they tend to be focused on British and European, certainly the arts. When it comes to history, the notion of migration, you know, stopped with Romans and Greeks. And the next few thousand years, including, you know, the last 50 odd years, is forgotten. It's barren ground with regards to curriculum. So it really does require rebalancing the whole curriculum.
Yeah, no, very, very much. Amajit, you mentioned a term which I'd really like to explore a bit more. And it sort of alludes to a question, really. What do you guys see real excellence in anti-racism in FE? What do we need to do as a sector to be to moving away from where we are now, to be really being mindful to being anti-racist, to being inclusive?
The starting point from my perspective is, with anything that you determine you want to improve, you accept the baseline. Mm. That's really important, because then you can focus on the solutions. And our 10-point plan identifies the baseline, but the data, you know, needs to be much more robust. Without repeating myself, it is about student experiences, students' access, and it's particularly about advice, guidance, and teacher and institutional interventions, which are positive. It's recognizing the importance of equity as opposed to equality, because people don't start at the same level playing field. But it's also fundamentally about great leadership. Mm-hmm. And leadership at all levels, leadership in teaching situations, through the support services, through middle management, and ultimately at senior leadership and governance, not only at provider level, but at sectoral level. An uncomfortable truth is there's very little chance of a Black person becoming a chair or the CEO of any of the sectoral institutions in the current landscape, and that can't be right.
So it's a challenge for the sector, really. I suppose if I was to put this into, like, looking at a solution for this here, is how do we long-term develop a solution as well? And as Robin said, it would be around Black learners being able to have, you know, more representation to their teachers, trainers, tutors, assessors, etc. How do we look to try and build those entry level roles, which then basically becomes the pipeline for those leaders of the future? So we're addressing both. We're addressing an immediate need now with governance, which I think is a brilliant idea, but also with that pipeline for the future. So we're developing those leaders of the future. So how can the sector start to engage, but at the same time, it not go too far where it is being balanced? Do you know what I mean? So we're not sort of, pushing too hard on one area when we're not. We do need to address, if you're saying that there is, for some areas, it seems absolutely crazy that you haven't got the governance or the leadership which represents the community, and at the same time, why haven't you got the teachers and lecturers and tutors, trainers, assessors, that also are able to address that? But at the same time, we need to make sure we're getting the best fit for people as well. How do we as a sector address what is such a difficult challenge to do? How can we go about addressing this to make sure we have the best people for the role, but at the same time, we have such a large pool that we can take from many different backgrounds. Do you know what I mean? How do we address that issue?
I'll have a crack at this one, Gavin. I think what we do know is that the sector has done it before. In the past, we had a similar challenge and we were able to collectively rise to the challenge and deal with it. And we had a real bit of traction going. This was over 10 years ago. And then things stopped. And part of the issue now is the challenge is that we must have the uncomfortable discussion. And that's what we're partly doing now. We're actually saying we can't be in denial. And we're very pleased that the majority, the vast majority of the sector stakeholders have accepted there's a problem. What we can't also have is a superficial approach to tackling that problem. In the past decade, people have defaulted to an equality, diversity and inclusion approach, which has actually been part of the problem. It's putting everybody into a box and saying, we'll tick all these boxes and everything will be hunky-dory. And in fact, you're ignoring the scope and scale of the challenge. So we need to have that debate. We need to have a set of solutions and we need to address some of the key issues. One of those is that there's clear bias. There's clear bias in recruitment and selection and promotion and retention. Now, people have defaulted in recent years to this notion of unconscious bias. But if you accept unconscious bias, you also have to accept that there is conscious bias. And if one is unacceptable, then the other must be unacceptable as well. So let's call it a spade and say we will root out bias in our sector. We have to also accept that there's a notion of white privilege, which counterbalances black underprivilege. And that is not about saying that white people are all privileged in inverted commas. It's about saying that the very colour of your skin can be such an inhibitor of your progress that it overrides your talent, it overrides your level of education, it overrides everything. And that's a debate that needs to be tackled. But within that, that's the reality the situation, we're not looking to have black kids being taught by black tutors. We're looking for people to approach teaching, learning in an anti-racist way, challenging what's unacceptable, explaining history. We can't understand how to move forward if we don't have a clear grasp of our history, and driving quality, as Amajit has said, and really saying, you can do it to our kids. You can do this. You can overcome these challenges. And we will show you how, and we'll hold your hand there. And once you get to where you want to go to, we'll help you find a rewarding career.
Gavin, can I just build on that from a very personal lived experience perspective? I think we've lost the era of consciousness, and that's the unique necessary function that BFELG are playing by raising that level of consciousness, because as a beneficiary of that previous era, there's three critical observations for me, which is I was part of a professional workforce which was amongst the most dedicated, I would arguably identify anywhere that you will find public or private sector. So you raise consciousness, people will engage and they will try to do their best. I really do believe that, and that's inclusive. The second one is when you raise consciousness, the first thing you start with is culture. It's not about a numbers game. It's not about quotas. It's not about preferential treatment. It's about a change in culture. And the best organizations, and I've worked in a number of outstanding organizations, lead that change on cultural transformation. And the third one, which is absolutely fundamental to me, the first three interventions that led to progressions in my career, what I call the metaphorical hand on the shoulder, came from white leaders who made positive interventions on the basis of potential, basis of providing people with an opportunity to present themselves in best fit, but also advocacy, which is really strong. I won't go through the detail, but the third one was a result of the Black Leadership Program, as sadly passed away former leader from the North who met me on the M62 services, right? He bent over backwards to cross the Yorkshire border to Lancashire, where I was working in Oldham, and actually said, you can move into, you know, higher circles. So, you know, you've got a really dedicated workforce, focus on culture, and we've got to create a systemic hand on the shoulder, because like me, there are many, many Black professionals who don't even have the aspiration or don't believe they can elevate there as well. So it's not about workshops and schemes. It's proactive interventions.
And can I ask a question which probably a lot of people would be thinking? And it's one of the ones where it's always a difficult one to ask, really. I'm a white, middle-aged guy, and I'm really keen to be able to help the Black FE Leadership Group. There are many other people that are going to be like me. How can people that don't come from a BAME background, you know, that are, you know, white, middle-aged, male or female, whatever, how can they help the Black FE Leadership Group? Because I think it's one of those questions that people just don't think they know how to ask. So how can they help? You know, how can they help, you know, really step forward and be able to help the entire sector united come together to be able to address diversity, to be able to actually not just put it into a badge like Robin has said, to be able to be bundled in with everything else, but to actually be very conscious looking at how can the FE sector become anti-racist, to be able to actually then help with learners, to help with initial recruits of staff that are going to be leaders of the future. How can we help with those hands on the shoulder that help from like that entry level teaching staff to being the college principal of the future? How can we help those people be encouraged to be able to cross over the Yorkshire and Lancashire border to be able to then reach someone else and say, look, I've got faith in you. You can do this. How can everyone in the sector get behind the Black FE Leadership Group? What do they need to do?
Can I just name names, Amajit? That was Reg Chapman you were talking about.
Absolutely spot on.
There are lots of Reg Chapmans in the FE sector still. 27% of college principals have signed our open letter. That's a phenomenal proportion, as you said, Gavin, in lockdown. And you know, one of the things we have in common with the Black Lives Matter movement is that we understand we can't do this alone. As David Hughes said very clearly, this is not on black leaders only, it's on all of us. And that is the only way we can make progress on this. We are an organization which lives by partnership working. One of the things that's clear is that there are large numbers of committed white staff who understand the social injustice that's quite evident. Not all of them know what to do about it because they don't feel they have the skills, they feel uncertain, and obviously FE leaders are under huge pressure just to keep the books balanced. So we have to acknowledge that. So that's part of the reason why we have a 10-point plan. This is a toolkit that you can develop and use, and make it fit for your own organization in your own context. And we are there to help you. We will help you directly. We'll help you by signposting the people who can help you better than we can. And we can critique some of the things you're doing and make suggestions. But there's no one thing is clear, we will not make progress on this agenda item unless we're all working together.
Yeah. And Gavin, my personal direct advice to you is you're slightly behind the wave. You really need further, to engage, because we've got professors of eminent Russell Group universities presenting research capacity. We've had a discussion with a white chair of a college who is an outstanding HR professional, talking about what does an anti-racist recruitment process look like. And we've also had some very, very confidential discussions with white principals of large colleges, saying, me as a leader, I really want to step up to this plate. Where do I start? So, there's lots and lots of engagement happening in different shapes or forms, and which really leads me to the point that the intellectual capacity of the group is pretty awesome. Gosh, I'm learning more now than I probably have, in the last maybe 5 years of leadership in a further education institution. And that's because of the professional and intellectual community that represents this. So it's not simply a movement. It's really important. Personally, I'm not interested in protest. No. I'm not interested, in campaigning and so on. I'm about positive, sustainable change, which touches the lives and the futures of our students and our staff and our communities.
That's fantastic. And I think for a sector, so often we can get bogged down and forget that as a sector, further education makes impactful change to individuals, to employers, to families, to communities. And in our essence, the whole area of FE is around instilling positive change through education. And we can do that to our learners and to our communities. And now this really shines a positive light of solutions to be able to help the whole sector be able to come together to make fundamental change and to actually shine a positive light on, we need to be thinking about this. And Robin and Amjit, I wanted to say thank you for your time today. I'd love to invite you back for future podcasts to see how this is progressing, because, from your first meeting in July to this now being in October, we've had huge amount of progress. What will the next 6 months bring? What will the next several months bring when you've able to meet more and more and more people across the sector? And I think it'll be really interesting to see, because data takes time. So once data has been in play, it'll be really cool to see what's happened in a couple of years as to what's happened with governance, what's happened with leaders, what's happened with delivery staff and practitioners coming into the sector, and how that's positively impacted learners. Everything you're talking about here makes absolute sense, and it's just, we can't wait to be able to get all of the sectors better, unite together and to be able to really push this over the line to be able to help the whole sector, then the whole nation, be able to move forward. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Why not click subscribe so you can be informed when the latest next individual podcast or podcast mini series from FE News are going to be released.